Welcome to Making Good Choices with Amber O'Carter. I'm your host, Amber O'Carter, and this is episode 6. And in this episode, I have my friend Danielle come on the podcast to talk about creating tensions that feel good, knowing what your sweet spot is when it comes to work, and making good choices when it comes to the opposite sex. You guys are going to love Danielle and her very sharp and witty insights. And we also have kind of a fun story when it came to how we became friends. Though when you get into it, which we will, it's not surprising that we are friends. Here we are, episode 6.
You say a lot of things. Say anything.
Oh my goodness. So how's it going? How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, same old, really.
Yeah?
Yeah. I hate to break it to you. You moved back to Minneapolis, but things aren't that exciting here. At least not for me.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I'm still kind of like easing into all of it, I think. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, it looked like you've been doing a lot of good stuff already, which is great. I mean, you didn't wait for anything, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm waiting to get a job, but
that is not waiting. That is being selective.
Like, there was a moment yesterday where I'm like, you know, Amber, if you wanted to, you could do this. And I'm like, but I don't have to right now, and I can just write. Hold on, I'm going to grab another coffee.
That is a job. That's your whole job.
Yeah. I'm looking at... This and writing is my job, so. All right. So tell me, how has this past year been for you?
This past year, it's been a blur.
Yeah.
I would say overall, you know, this is my thing about New Year's. Every New Year, I'm like super excited. I'm like, this is going to be the best year. And I'm like, 14 is my favorite number. It's going to be the best year. Boy, was that like a big disappointment. Too many expectations. You should never go into anything with too many expectations.
Yeah. Have you read what is it? Shoot. It's by Danielle Laporte. I have it in here. It's something, it's called the Desire Map. And I use that over the new year, just because like I am that person that like when I make a ton of goals and when I make a ton of New Year's resolutions, either I don't accomplish them or I don't accomplish them the way that I mean to. Right. And so like, and I remember like hearing a talk once about how like you set a goal and either you come a little bit under it and then you feel like crap. You set a goal and then the outcome is different than what you wrote down and then you feel like crap. You set a goal and then you go above and beyond it and then you feel like crap because you feel like you should have aimed higher with your goal.
Wow, I've never had that happen.
I haven't either. I don't know what she's talking about. But
I know.
But it was interesting because she's just like, instead of like making those, because I'm sure you've heard this 1,000 times before too, where it's like it's the whenever I'm on the podcast, I can never think of a specific name for anything. But if like we were at like
words
McDonald's, I'd be like,
blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. But you know, those I think it's called time or start or something where it's just like you have to like be incredibly specific about your goal setting, where it's like you have to be specific about like what the end point is, the date that you want to reach it, and like the amount that you want to reach it. Yeah, and she's just like, get rid of it. She's like, it's a great theory. It doesn't work. She's like, people just get upset about it after a while. And so like her whole premise about goal setting, this is why I need like
you
another person in here.
What's happening over here?
I need another person in here because every once in a while, like I said, like I can't think of things when I'm on the podcast and then I get distracted and nervous because I'm trying to look it up for everybody so I can like figure out what I need to say.
I think the general idea was understood.
Okay. Good.
You should be very specific. I am never very specific.
Post. Yeah.
I think that a little bit of self-sabotage. Because I don't want to set myself up for failure, which is exactly how I set myself up for failure. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, I'm not going to feel bad about this if I don't achieve it. So I'll make it very loose.
Yes. Yeah.
I read this thing 2 years ago. I guess it was 2 years ago now where it was like, make yourself a 5-year goal.
Yep.
And it doesn't have to be realistic. And
right.
just say, where do you want to be in 5 years? And don't worry about what things you can and can't control.
Right.
So for me, it was like, okay, in 5 years, I want to be working a job where I can bring my dog to work every day. Mm-hmm. And I want to be married and have one kid.
Right.
Things that I can't control, right? Maybe
right.
the first half I could,
yeah.
but
yeah.
not the second half. And I was like, that's going to be my goal. I'm just going to throw it out there and it's just going to fall into place, right? That's the magic of it. If you keep thinking this is your goal, it's just going to magically appear.
So much anxiety about that. Yeah.
I am no closer than I was then. I also, at the same time, told myself, I'm giving myself 18 months to change something huge about my life.
Okay. I like that. That's a good
yes
one.
And yeah. No, because okay. Then I hit that 18-month mark, and it was the worst month of this year.
Oh, no.
It was like me having constant like panic attacks, that feeling of, you know, the early midlife crisis where you're like sitting there and you're like, oh, crap, I need to change everything. Yeah. I have to throw everything out the window. And it's like, I don't know, goal setting is a scary thing because you put yourself in that position where you can ultimately disappoint yourself.
Yes.
Where typically I don't feel like I disappoint other people very often, but I often disappoint myself.
Yes. I have a lot of anxiety about goal setting. Like right. Because I think that too, where if I'm writing down a goal, somehow I think that like I'm etching it in stone and the universe is going to take that and like either make it like the literal wish or it's going to be something that like I can't get out of.
Right.
So I love the idea of like setting goals and thinking about like where do I want my life to be, like what do I want to do.
Right.
But I get a lot of anxiety about it, and then I'll spend a whole day doing it, and it's like, you know, this time would be more productive like trying to reach that goal instead of like trying to frame it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I do the self-sabotage stuff too.
But yeah. I think it's why I'm such a dabbler.
Yeah. Because
I feel like I'm always like, I want to try this, but I don't want to commit to it.
Right.
Let me do this for 3 months, see
yes.
how I like it. If I absolutely love it, I'll just keep doing it. And it'll just be what I need to be doing.
My friend Carrie uses the phrase, I'm interested, but I'm not committed.
Yes.
And like she, and that was like a big deal for her too, because she was one of those people who, from what she told me, she would overcommit to things and she'd like agree to do things and she'd say yes and then she'd get resentful about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she just learned to just be that person who's like, I'm interested, but I'm not committed.
Mm-hmm.
And like to other people asking her to do stuff and then for herself too, of just like, I'm not necessarily, like we were talking about going on a diet or whatever. And she's like, I'm interested, but I'm not committed. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel too.
I get that.
No, the thing that I like about the desire map though is that instead of writing down those specific goals, what she encourages people to focus on is the feeling underneath that goal.
Mm,
so I think when it comes to me and like my like mini midlife crises, like the crises to use correct pronunciation. But the underlying thing about that is that I want to feel like I'm thriving. I want to feel like I'm moving towards fulfillment and things like that. So instead of focusing so much on the frame of what that looks like,
right?
Or maybe it's the other way around. It's more of just this thing of,
well, isn't the goal for everyone to be happy?
Yeah.
Right?
Or like to achieve that feeling.
Right.
Yeah. Where
I think
it's like,
nobody
yeah.
realizes like you're making these goals, but the goal should be to be happy. And
right.
what those actual tasks are to get there is the elusive part.
Yes. And it's the thing that, I mean, there's so many different variables and influences that can throw that like specific, that mm-hmm. specific thing off. And so instead, if you're focusing on like, I want a new job or I want to get a new race, like what is the reason for that? I want more abundance mm-hmm. or I want to feel like I'm successful.
Wow,
like,
is abundance the new term to say more pay?
Because
I like that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've heard anyone say it that way. I'm totally
going
to use that.
Abundance and wealth, yeah. But it's just, to me, it's a really interesting concept just because it really gets to the heart of what is it that you're actually really striving for?
Right.
And can you find that feeling in other things? And then, like, if you're a self-sabotager like you and me, that's much easier because then it's like, well, no, like, what I'm striving for is this feeling.
Right.
And I want to feel it all the time. So then how can I feel it in other aspects of my life, too? And then you're not so focused on, by September 5th, 2015,
right.
I'll be making this much money at my job.
Right. Well, it's interesting, though, because what I'll say about the last year that's been kind of an eye-opener is,
mm-hmm.
you know, my year and a half, 2 years of trying to goal set. One of the things I said is, you know, I'd either move up to the next level in my current job. Or I would leave the company.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because I was striving so hard for that position and been, you know, knocking on doors, so to speak, and talking to people and trying to do all the right, quote unquote, right things to get that promotion. And then I would say in the last 6 months, it was like I really looked at what my manager did, which is what that role is. And I was like, sat in a status with her one day and I was like, I don't want your job. It sucks. Yeah. And she's great. So she like doesn't get upset when I say things like your job sucks, you know? Like, I'm not trying to make you feel bad about what you do. You do a great job at it, but mm-hmm. it sounds kind of awful. And it's funny because I'm like still kind of in the lineup to be interviewing for these positions right now. And another one's coming up. And at the same time, there's part of me that just recently got really thrown backwards as far as what I had to do at work. Okay. I had my assistant designer just quit.
Okay.
No notice. And going into like my busiest time of my year. And I had 1 month of insanity of just like, you know, working late and working on the weekends and like trying to bang this stuff out without any help. And strangely, it was no problem. Like, I was happier. I was doing the design stuff that I hadn't been doing in a really long time.
Okay.
And it was like that second piece where I'm like, oh crap, what do I do now? Cause I'm like, I already decided that I thought her job sucked.
Right.
And now on top of it, I'm like, oh my God, I almost liked what I did 5 years ago better than what I'm doing now.
Yep.
And I'm like, and how do you come to terms with that whole, it's not, you know, moving forward in terms of your career. It's not what people would think you would aspire to do. And you have to come to the terms of like, am I okay not moving up?
Right.
Am I okay just like
being
at that level forever? You know?
It's tough because you have this, I think, especially in our society, in our culture, we have that inherent expectation that if you're good at this role, mm-hmm. then you should move up to the next role.
Right.
But there's also that thing that's similar to a phrase called failing forward, mm-hmm. where I learned that when I was a behavioral therapist too, is that, excuse me, like my inherent talent and passion at that job was working with kids. We called it like being on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Where like I would work with the kids and run their programs and like just have these relationships with them. And then also like leading a team of other therapists and like encouraging them and teaching them how to do all these different behavior therapy techniques. But I also am a pretty inherently ambitious person. And so I kept feeling like, no, like I want to be that person who's the senior therapist.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then you get into the senior therapist role and you're like, I don't do therapy with hardly any of these kids anymore. Like literally all I do is I write program reports for insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
I have meetings with parents, which is sometimes a nightmare because it's that thing of like you're managing. You're putting out fires everywhere. You have essentially become an administrator. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I can't talk today. But instead,
it's my beauty. It's making you so nervous.
Yes, I'm so tongue-tied. But it's a thing where when you get into it as a therapist because you love working with these kids and you love doing therapy. You mm-hmm. love kind of the science of behavioral therapy.
And that's then why you got in it in the first place.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, all you're doing is writing reports, which sometimes I liked. I liked creating programs. I liked directing the focus of the therapy. And I love being in charge. Like, I'm just that person that I'm like, I like being the one who not necessarily has the final say because I like the team mentality too, but I mm-hmm. like being in charge.
Right.
But it was something that I remember there was a couple other people in kind of my class in the company. We all kind of started at the same time. And there were a couple of people who went to that level and then they were like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, give me the same pay, but put me back down to like behavioral therapist,
right.
Which was a bold move because not a lot of people understand it. And one person had to really over explain it at a meeting that he wasn't being demoted, that he was choosing this. And we're like, yeah, we get it. But I think too.
And I've seen that with design role too.
Yeah.
Like people go to the management and they're like, oh no, this is not for me.
Give me the same amount of money that you give me if you promoted me, but like let me stay where I'm
happy. That's always the beneficial part if you can stay at the same level of pay.
It is. It's nice. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting though because I don't think we have a lot of stories from people like that.
Mm-hmm.
We more hear the stories of the people who are like, I shot up to the top of the company, or here's how you can move up, or here's how you can do
this. Well, I feel like it usually becomes a path where the person goes off and does their own thing.
Yeah.
Like take what they did like and they create their own business out of it or their own opportunity out of it. And it's never the same as mm-hmm. that management role is. Because I don't know. It's very strange that you can want something so badly and then actually look it in the eye and be like, oh, wait, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Just kidding.
<Yeah.
laughs> You know, it is really
a huge thing. Yeah.
It's hard. I think it's a hard thing for people like in our age group that get to a higher level that they've been striving for a really long time. And then all of a sudden, what are their goals? You know, if they they realize at that point that they're at, they're like, there's really nothing up that I like.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. Is that a societal thing? Like, why do we need to move up? Like, I feel like generations ago, people would do the same job for 20, 30 years and be masters at it. And that was viewed as a good thing. And, you know, is it really just the shift in, you know, the way people work?
Thing. Yeah, I think we've created that culture because I agree with you where it used to be there was a company structure and there was a person who was at a certain level and they've been at that level for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And now you would look at that person and be like, why haven't you gotten promoted yet?
Right.
Like,
but that person would never be replaced in the past. And that's kind of the difference. It's like people are always looking to see like who's going to be the new you, who's going to take your spot, who's going to, you know, freshen this up or whatever it is, you know?
Exactly. And I think we have those like legend stories of the kid who started in the mailroom and now like, you know what I mean? It's things like that where if that's what you want to do, that's awesome. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because I wish that we would hear more stories of that from people who found themselves at a certain level and they're like, I'm happy. Like, I want to stay here. Like, don't give me that promotion. Give me the raise, but don't give me that.
Value me for what I'm actually good at, which is what I'm doing right
now. Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to have to spend money having to retrain somebody to do what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been thinking the past, since I moved back down to Minneapolis, I'm kind of sort of playing with the idea of going back to like the 9-to-5 world. But sometimes when I talk about it, I'm like, I don't know.
You get depressed instantly.
I mean, I think I've been out of like the corporate sphere for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I think I have a little bit more of a fresher perspective on it in terms of, I mean, 2 years ago, if you would have asked me if I wanted a straight 9-to-5, I probably would have thrown up in your lap. Like, it just wasn't where I wanted to be. I think it's more the fact of like being here and knowing that there are some interesting opportunities where I could actually do things that I want to do and that I'd be interested in doing and interested in learning more about. Mm-hmm. But there is still that part of me where it's like it's really important to, I think the thing that I've learned from my past career, it's really important to know what kind of company culture you're getting into.
Right.
Because that can make or break everything.
And I feel like there's a lot of optimistic people out there that write these articles about how you have to make the space what you want it to be.
I totally used to write this article.
I'm sorry. I have been working in the same company for 11 years and have been on many different teams. Yeah. And I don't really think it's anything I can control because I've had teams that are amazing and I've had teams that were less than amazing. Right. And I'd like to believe that I remain consistent and that, you know, I try to be as pleasant and as helpful as I can be to anyone in any role. And at the same time, there's sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And it's like, you can't control other people and you can only, you know, control how you react to those people.
Yes.
So saying that you're going to come in and change the environment or the culture or something is total BS. I'm sorry. You can improve it. If you're at the top and you replace someone who maybe was very controlling, you can improve it. Like, I definitely have a different management style, you know, even with like, you know, I've only had small teams too at the most, you know, I definitely have a different management style than other people that I know at the same level as me. And, you know, I think it's helped a lot of people, but it actually is very different based on who your, you know, direct reports are, who your team structure is. It's like my style works great for some people, but I don't know that it will for everyone. And they're not gonna be able to change me. I can try to adapt, but there's only so far you can stretch, you know?
Yeah. I, with my experience with the company that I worked for before, I used to write these, we had like a weekly newsletter that would come out and I wrote a column that was kind of about improving company culture or improving your role in it. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed writing those articles just because it was a fun outlet for me to kind of bring that part of my life into that job. Mm-hmm. And I liked what I wrote for it, but sometimes I look back on it and I think my boss would agree with this, that a lot of times writing those columns was trying to almost convince myself of like, no, we can all be really happy here.
Well,
like,
I think it's an optimistic thing. Yeah. And it's a way to express to other people that you care about them, mm-hmm. that you want them to be happy. It just doesn't necessarily achieve the actual job.
No. And it was tough writing. It was...
Wait, you wrote this at the place that you left because you didn't like the culture anymore.
I never liked the culture. So. I liked some of the people that I worked with. Mm-hmm. we had a really, like, again, we had a really tight class of people that kind of all started at the same time. And it was great that way, because it was a very, at the behavioral therapist level, it was a very playful place to work, because literally all you're doing is playing with kids all day and teaching them things through play. Mm-hmm. So it was a very fun environment that way. The company culture, I had a lot of issues with. My boss was amazing. Like, she's become one of my best friends since I've left. But the company culture at its deepest level treated its employees like we were 13-year-olds. It was different things like clocking in, clocking out. I don't know how to explain it without...
Very micromanagey.
Super, super micromanagey. It just, there wasn't the level of respect for the adults that work there that should, it kind of felt like mom and dad are telling us that, like, we're afraid that you're going to go out and party all night, so we're going to make your curfew, like, super strict right away. Like, we're not even going to give you the chance to, like, make your own decision.
That's interesting.
It was things like that. And it was a lot of just, like, weird passive aggressive stuff. And, like, when I left the company, there was a lot of different, like, last straws, but it was things like they wanted to build a new clinic, so they told all the employees that their raises were all going to be capped because they needed to put that money towards growing the company.
Well, that's motivating.
And they like wanted me to make sure that people weren't talking about it and weren't upset about it and weren't complaining about it in lunch. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, nobody gets paid enough here anyways. We look forward to raises all year long. And now you're telling us that we have to kind of just suck it up so you guys can make more money with a new clinic. And they tried to give like some BS explanation of like, we can't grow without this clinic. We can't pay you more without continuing to grow. And it was just one of those things where I'm like, I'm kind of done. Like, it was like a bad relationship that you keep convincing yourself that, no, I'm
just
happy.
Just a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'm
It'll
happy.
It'll work
it's
itself out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or like, this is really good. So like everything else I can just, you know, kind of deal with or whatever. And yeah.
But that's a trick of passion also, because mm-hmm. you're so passionate about what it is that you think you're achieving.
Yeah.
You're going to let stuff slide. You're going to take the hit yourself. You know,
yes.
I think people do it for protecting other people all the time. And so, especially being in a social field where you're working towards the betterment of others.
Right. Yeah.
You're going to try to do whatever you can because you think the ultimate goal is worth it.
And
it's
that was
worth
in our
the
nature.
Sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah. It was in our nature to
kind of take an advantage of a bunch of people with
that
in their nature.
Oh my gosh. I never thought about it that way before. Yeah, it's totally true. Cause it was totally in our nature to just kind of like, we'd initially be angry about it and then be like, okay, like it's really good at the company. Like we'll do it. Right. And I don't know. I just remember leaving and it was, and I think a lot of people go through this when they leave a company too, especially after being there for a while. It was like a bad breakup. I had to kind of resolve all this bitterness and resentment that I had towards this company that I had given like 4 years of my life to for like
that whole
very little pay.
The decompression phase is so important because you do have a lot of bottled up things.
Yeah.
You know, you really need to take that time.
Yeah.
I think that's what's hard about being in a company for so long is like, if you have no plans of leaving or, you know, leaving without another job, which is what I did the last time that I quit a job 11 years ago, you know, it's hard. You never get rid of that feeling because you're just moving on to the next thing and you're just bottling it all up and taking it along with you. So the fact that you got out and had that time is a wonderful aspect.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, I think everyone should do it.
I highly recommend it. Yeah. I mean, it's been a great 5 years, but I think that's one of the fears too, is that I still remember being in that career in the last year. I was deeply unhappy with it. Mm-hmm. I just wanted more autonomy. I wanted to be treated like an adult. I wanted to be able to go on Twitter on my lunch break and not get in trouble for it.
Wow.
Things like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't want like the big brother aspect of it.
Right.
But there was also that fear piece that I had to work through of what am I going to do if I leave? Right. Or I need to find another job. I don't really want to find another job because then I have to like do resumes and I have to go on interviews. And like, that's such a, you know what I mean? It was kind of that thing where it's bad enough for me to be unhappy, but it's not bad enough for me to actively want to try to get out of it until finally I was just like, I quit. I'm done. I'm out.
And when you were in that back and forth in that last year, how many days did you come away on a good day and it erased all of the thoughts you had the previous month? Because that's my issue is like, I'll be like, no, I'm ready. I'm like gonna do this now and I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna work on that portfolio and I'm gonna, you know, make that next move and start researching companies. And then I have a good day and then I put it all in the back pocket again. And then a month later I start over again, you know. And
it's like a relationship. It really is. It's like that relationship where 90% of the time you're miserable, 10% of the time it's good and you stay in it for that 10%. Right. And then when you get out of it, you're like, that makes no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like how, why did I waste my life doing that?
Or you look at, if you look at it as a whole and you had other similar situations to compare it to, that's also a dangerous thing too.
Yes.
Because I can say like, I've had, you know, prior to coming to my current company, like I was in five other companies where a couple of them were smaller family owned companies and people are really insane in those kind of, they can do whatever they want and it gets a little wacky. And then I did work for a couple of corporations and of the places, this still was better.
Yeah.
And that's the other fear too, is that what if I don't find anything better? Because I know what worse looks like and I don't want to see worse because this is looking pretty sweet right now.
Yeah. 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 No,
it is a relationship aspect too. It's definitely the same ball game with when you're in a relationship that you're like, it's not as bad as this person.
Right. No, that's so true. Like it is one of those things where, when I left my job, and people who are listening to this podcast or have read my blog have probably heard this story a billion times, so I apologize. But it was one of those things where I was pulled into a conference room and I was given a lecture about some stuff that I was like, I'm done. Like I'm done kind of like giving my all to this company when it's still not good enough. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't like it here. I'm unhappy here. I'm no longer doing a good job. I think that was a big, like that was the clincher for me, was the fact that since the day I started, it had been so important for me to be the best, to be the best therapist, to be the best leader, to be like all the best of these things. And that last year I was just like, you know, I don't give a shit. Like I was just kind of tired of like constantly having to prove myself. And we would do these things where you'd have to do like performance tests on your skills. And like it was good in a way because you can never kind of rest on your laurels. You can never kind of go lax with what with behavioral therapy. But it was another thing where it's like, you know what? Like I've been doing this for this many years. Like I'm tired. I'm tired of doing it again. I'm tired of you pulling me into this conference room and give me a lecture about stuff that like I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. Mm-hmm. And I remember just like the CEO had kind of given me an ultimatum and she's like, you need to come in on Monday and do this and this and this, or you know, we're gonna have to let you go. And I just kind of looked at her, I'm like, I'm done. Like, I think this is probably a good time for me to give you my 2 weeks.
Right.
And I wasn't afraid of getting fired. Because it was kind of that thing of like, good, like do it,
right.
Get unemployment. Right.
That's the moment where you go, do I wait and get fired and collect unemployment, or do I just walk?
Yeah, no, and it was just that. It was
what makes me feel worse.
Yeah, it's one of those incredibly distinct moments in your life where you're sitting in a chair in a conference room, and everything just kind of goes quiet, and your heart starts beating really fast, and you're like, this is the choice that I know I need to make. And I made it, and I thought for sure I would start hyperventilating. I thought I would start crying and panicking, and I just felt, like, completely calm. And I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. Mm-hmm. And I did that, and I was met with two very distinct reactions from my group of friends. I had one group of friends that was like, that's amazing. That's so awesome. I'm so excited for you. I'm really proud of you for
like doing that. If I knew you then, I would have been on that side.
Yeah. And then I had other friends who was like, oh my God, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do? Like, it's a bad job market. Like, what are you going to do? And like, they would like transfer their like fear and panic and anxiety over onto me. Yeah. But it taught me something when it comes to making those life choices. And the way that those friends react is very telling of the way that they feel about their own situation.
Exactly.
The friends who were like, that's awesome. I'm so excited to see what you're going to do next. Like, it'll be great. Those are the ones that know that they're going to be fine, right. That have enough like self-confidence and self-resolve to make the decisions that they need to make for their own self-worth. the ones who flipped out and were like so scared for me are the ones who, when faced with those decisions, like that's their own fear. Like they're translating their own fear onto you. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I totally know. And I think that's just because their world is skewed in that way. Yeah. That they feel, you know, they can't live without that
exactly.
job.
Exactly. Yeah.
A lot of people struggle, I think, with losing identity too. Mm-hmm. So you leave a position that maybe you've been in a long time. There's fear of like, who am I then? You know?
Yes.
And that is very hard and obviously takes practice because
being in a place for a long time.
Yeah. You know, you don't know what you are outside, you know.
Right.
It's kinda like you gotta reinvent yourself, and the older you get, the harder it is because I was able to do that very often when I was young. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, being in one place for a long time, your mind, your body, everything gets sedentary. You know, you start to lose some of that flexibility, that ability to easily recoup and rebrand yourself or, you know, put yourself back out there in many ways.
So, and when you have a title that you like.
Yes.
That for 10 years I had been a behavioral therapist and I had been proud of that title.
Right.
And I liked, in a totally like conceited way, I liked the reactions that I got from people when I told them that I
totally
was that.
Get that.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I wasn't that anymore. And at that point, right when I quit, I wasn't really quite sure what I wanted to be anymore. The day that I left the company, that very night, my friend Dave came to me and asked me to join this startup that he was doing with another guy, Jeff. And so they kind of asked me to be kind of the director of like the creative content and kind of the social media strategy and stuff like that. But that was still, even back then, like that was still kind of a new thing. And so there still wasn't kind of, there wasn't the defined roles that we see now. It was kind of this thing of like, you'd be like, well, I do social media and I do content strategy for the startup, and people just didn't know what you were talking about.
I still don't really know what it means.
Yeah. I mean,
it could mean a lot of different things in a lot of different places. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was kind of an identity crisis. And then I started moving more into the idea of, well, no, like I'm a writer and I've always been a writer. It's just been something that's taken a backseat to this career that I thought would make me happy, when all the while, one of the reasons why I quit was because I had been writing a book that year and loved it so much that I realized this is what I want to do. This is what makes me happy. I want to rush through my job so I can get home and write this book. I want to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to write this book. So, yeah. And I don't know. I think it's interesting that identity crisis is something that people don't necessarily realize when they're thinking of making that step.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting you talk about that you want to get home to work on this, you know, this book, this project. You know, I know you've read a lot about this, and I've read some stuff about like flow and like when you find that sweet spot of what it is that doesn't take any energy for you to do, really. I mean, you just start to get into it and you just start to do it and hours go by and you're like, whoa, you know, okay, it wasn't so bad. You know, I was mentioning, you know, when I was put back in that position where I'm doing all this design work that I hadn't done in a long time, it was that moment. And it's like some of that brings you back to like, where did I start? Why did I go into this? Like there was a point where you have that, you see that flow and you latch onto it. I don't know what it would have been for you when you were a behavioral therapist, like what interested you in it originally. But I think it's really hard to get back to those roots, like to get back to what the elemental thing is and then figure out what that actual skill or trait or type of opportunity is that, you know, you're really looking for, because there's definitely a ton of stuff that you learned while you know, working in that field that I'm sure you use every day.
Nope.
Behavioral therapy, it seems like it should be the most useful thing. I mean, when I think of what, you know, it can entail.
I do it sometimes with relationships, definitely with pets. Like right now, my roommate's dog is terrified of the dishwasher.
Oh.
There's an origin story to that, but we're not sure what it is. But so I've used my skills to kind of, this would take a long time to explain, but basically like what I do is I pair treats with the dishwasher for the dog.
Oh, yeah.
So that it becomes this thing of this like,
changing it to a positive. Yeah.
Yeah. When I see the dishwasher, good things come.
Right.
And like when you talk about getting to the root or the flow of why you love something in the first place, for me, it was kind of that light bulb moment of, I'm going to set up this program through like playing blocks or whatever, and I'm going to teach this skill. And when it was successful, like that was kind of the high for me.
Right.
Of like trying to figure out these clever new ways to teach this without the six-year-old having any idea whatsoever that he's working.
It's all a trick.
Yeah.
You're smoking mirrors. Tomfoolery over here.
Which I use in relationships as well. But yeah, I mean, I use a little, and sometimes for myself, like when I quit smoking, I'm very good at analyzing myself of like, what am I pairing this with so that.
How do I break the habit?
Yeah. How do I break the habit? And then how do I transfer what it is that I'm trying to get from it into something less destructive? Right. So, like goal setting, sometimes that's not always successful to do it on yourself, but it is. Yeah. I mean, I use a lot of life application for it, but I would say that the majority of my career was a lot of like data taking and rote psychology and reports. I don't do any, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay. I left probably 75% of that behind for, and good. Like I'm happy about that.
No,
but yeah,
that doesn't sound that exciting.
No, it's some incredibly people, glamorous. Yes.
Well, no, I mean, you would think you like writing reports, writing, kind of. Not really.
No. But I know what you mean though, of the definitely like that flow is, yeah, it's one of those things that I think that was kind of a trigger moment for me too, because I think I had read an article about that around the same time that I was going to quit.
Oh, it finds you.
Yeah.
All at the right times. Because I feel like every time one of those articles passes in front of me, it's because I'm like completely out of flow. Like I've lost touch with what it is that I want or what I like. And then it'll pop up in front of me and I'll be like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Same way that you tend to write me every time I'm thinking about you and vice versa.
Oh my gosh, me. So that's so funny. Like for listeners at home. So should we tell them how we met?
Go for it, but we can't spend too much time on this topic.
No, we don't want to. Nobody wants to spend too much time on this topic. So I had an ex-boyfriend that I was pretty serious with. For listeners at home, I'm telling you our story right now. So I had this ex-boyfriend that I was pretty serious with, and then I broke up with him, and it was a pretty tough breakup. And I moved, and then out of the blue, I got a Facebook message from somebody, and it was Danielle, my guest right now. And we shared the same ex-boyfriend, and so she reached out to me and connected with me, and we began talking. And it was interesting because it was a very similar relationship to what my friend had experienced as well.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Where it's this thing where you're with this guy and you think all these things about your relationship and then you break up and you meet the ex-girlfriend and you're like, oh no, like all these things. Yeah. All these things I thought were special were really just this thing that he was doing to everybody. But
yes.
Yeah, it was very enlightening. Mm-hmm. And the one good thing that we can take away is that he has great taste in women.
Yes.
Or great taste in girlfriends. But yeah, and we've since become super good friends. And we have this thing now where whenever I'm thinking about you, I'll get a message from you or I'll send you a message and I'm like, I was just thinking about you.
Yeah, it's a little spooky.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a connection.
Yeah, I was listening to your prior podcast a couple of days ago and you're talking about wine and I was like laughing to myself because I'm like, yes, all good things start with wine, because that night I drank about a bottle of wine on my own and was like, I'm not going to listen to my friends, because I had told my friends about the situation where I'm like, yeah, I went to Google her name and stumbled upon her blog where details that sound strikingly similar to, my ex. I
was like eerie details.
Yeah, and they were like, no, that's just weird. Don't write her. That's just weird. And I was like, I know it's weird.
I probably shouldn't. Yes. Like, we would all agree. Like, that would be weird.
Yeah.
But...
And I was like sitting there and I drank the wine and I guess just had read one of your blog entries. And I was like, nope, fuck it. I'm just going to write it. What is she going to do? She just doesn't write me back. No big deal.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of cool.
Yeah. That was awesome. It was totally what I needed.
Sometimes you just have to not listen to your friends.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes you have to listen to your gut.
Someone else out there in the universe is telling you to do something. Yeah. So.
No. And it was totally what I needed at the time. Because I remember just like, I'm not a big prayer anymore. But I remember just kind of being like, I just need... It was that thing where, like, after a breakup, your head is just so out of whack. And it's, like, so many different emotions. And I was just like, I just need some peace.
There's a lot of lack of reality. You don't really know what actually happened.
Right.
You know?
And there's no closure. Mm-hmm. And I think both of us had that feeling, too, of, like, neither of us got the closure that we were hoping for. I thought I did initially, and then things happened where I'm like, now I have to be mad about this, you know? Right. And so, like, carrying that into kind of the new life that I was going to lead and that I was living, it just messed everything up. And yeah, so then your letter was definitely that thing of like, okay, like all these things that I've been kind of wondering about and feeling upset about, and I don't have to worry and wonder about them anymore. Like, right. It just kind of, I remember even talking to my mom and being like, everything is so clear right now. And like in a way that made me sad and mad a little bit. But at the same time, it was like, nope, I don't have to think about this anymore. Like, I've got that peace.
I thought it was funny when you introduced me to your mom and yeah. how you introduced me. And I was just like, hi, that's me. Like, it just is a little like, oh, I'm glad that you've heard about me.
Well, no, she was so, like, I thought she was going to write you a thank you note.
Oh,
she
that's
was like,
too
oh, I'm so glad that she reached
funny.
Out to you.
That's
yeah,
because
it was just that thing where I'm like, oh. I don't, yeah, I don't know.
And it was interesting for me too, because I, you know, I was past it, like mm-hmm. whatever it had happened, you know, there was definitely like those things that, you know, I have a different outlook towards dating after and that's fine.
Yeah.
But like, I think I was in a weird point in that time too, because that was around when I was, no, it was a little bit before, but it was like, I was kind of trying to be like, what's my new direction? What's the next thing I need to do with my life? You know? And I was at that time in a different job and coming, you know, back and, I was a little directionless too. And I think some of the things that you were doing, especially like with spirituality and the readings and things. And
yeah.
I know I read the Gabrielle
Bernstein
yep. book and stuff. And I think that was really helpful for me from a different standpoint, because I was just like, I needed a new perspective.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was obviously mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. Hooray, right. Hooray for ex-girlfriends who band together.
Next topic. Let's move to new boyfriends. What do you got to do? What's going on with you?
Oh, gosh. There's none of them. No. I'm still in that. It's weird because I thought, I had this expectation that I'm going to move back down to Minneapolis and I'm starting to
be
dating
great.
All the time. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you. I dated most guys here, I think.
We should sit down and plot out all the guys that we've dated and be like,
oh,
this
no.
guy, this guy.
That would be bad, because I don't want to find out that we did any other guys in common. That would be bad.
I actually. My head's not been there. So.
This is like probably a bad thing to announce, because I think guys that maybe know who I am will be like, oh, crap. Because I have met so many ex-girlfriends people I've dated.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's, I think it's a weird thing about me now.
Okay.
Because it's like weird chance, like strange, really strange things of how I've met people. But I mean, a lot of them were like small relationships, like nothing that was really heart-wrenching. But it was more just like, really? You date that person too? Like, it must be the likeness of, you know, the people that they are dating.
I think so. I think it's, yeah, I know. I mean, people do have a type,
right?
As they say, like, I have a hard time being like, well, this is my type. But yeah, there.
I mean, I think we're definitely similar type.
We definitely know that our ex-boyfriend has a type. Like, because that was one of the things about his new girlfriend, was that I remember seeing a picture of her. I mean, like, yeah, I would bet you $1 billion that he'll date her after we break up. Could see it a mile away. But yeah, that's interesting. Because I don't know. There's been other ones, though. I just recently ran into another, like, big ex from my 20s, like, kind of like the big one. It was a really weird, random run-in, and he was with his new wife. And I somehow had heard through the grapevine that he was getting married to this woman that he was working with. And she is so different from me. It was like, oh, well, this is okay. You know,
right.
It's almost better when it's like you go totally in an opposite direction, because then you're like, nope, this is what you've been looking for. Mm-hmm. This wasn't going to work.
Right.
It's a little bit, I don't know if you would agree with me. I think it's a little bit more of a sting when the ex goes for somebody who's
very
similar. They basically just replace you with like a newer, better model in their eyes.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that is definitely worse. I will say, though, for myself, I feel like I go back and forth and date opposites of each other.
Yeah.
So like, I'll date one person and then go the extreme opposite. So like, if one guy is, you know, tall and heavy set and, you know, dark hair, the next guy will be short and skinny and blonde. It's really weird. I think I'm like wavering about what it is I want in life. So it's like,
no, I totally get that. Cause
I kind of feel like it's never the same person back to back.
See, and I don't feel that way either. Yeah, like I think if I look at if I put them all together in a lineup, I think there's definite similarities. It's mm-hmm. a lot of personality similarities.
Right.
Like, I really like, it's the outgoing and the funny and, like, kind of the humor is a big right. deal.
I want them to be more extroverted than me. I always say I like the shiny people.
See, and I want that, and I don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, if I look, there's only been a couple guys that I've been like, okay, you've been the life of the party. It's been more of like, you're really funny when we're together and really funny with your friends. But right. when we go out in a group, like, you're pretty quiet, which drives me crazy. But I have, like, last summer, I had a thing where, I think I told you about it, where I was dating kind of two guys at the same time. And it was Jordan the Young and Matt the Elder. Did I tell you about that?
I think I read about it. I don't think yeah. we actually talked about that one.
Yeah, because Jordan was 28, pursuing his master's. He was like an adjunct professor. Really incredibly good looking. Like, to the point where I'm like, are you sure you want to go out on a date with me? Like, I don't know if you're seeing
him.
Do
you start instantly looking for the flaw?
I do. You're like, where, okay, what's wrong?
Where's the edge of the yeah. mirror? Where's the edge of the
And like curtain? A great guy, younger than me. Like, he was 28. I was 34. And then there was the other one, Matt, I've known for like 10 years. Like, we met at Berkey, actually. Mm. He was the bartender at nice. The Sawmill. And we had just developed this friendship over 10 years. And there had always been like an attraction there.
Right.
And we didn't really, we hung out a lot in groups of friends. We never really went on like a official date. Right.
Those are the best and the worst though, because yes. then you're like, do I screw up the environment that I'm in? Do
exactly.
I, you know?
Yep. And I think that there had been a couple conversations. It became this thing where it was kind of like we were going around in parallel circles on the same different things, but we just could never really quite connect on them. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting because they were so different in terms of like who they were as people and kind of their outlooks in life. But at the same time, when I took a step back and kind of ended both those relationships, I'm like, I was basically dating the same person, only 7 years younger and 10 years older. Like, because they both were just kind of like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And like, it's we could go into a lot
that's our similarity.
Yeah,
are we both attracted to emotionally unavailable men?
Yes,
because yeah, I don't know what my issue is.
Absolutely.
With that, the second they're like super emotional, I'm like out. I don't know what my problem is. It's kind of like I sit there and I get too much attention and I'm like, no, look the other way, go away.
Oh my god. Yes, it's I think it's
if self-sabotage.
They can't pace it. Yes, I know I self-sabotage. I could bring in a panel of friends who would totally agree with that and have told me so. I think, like, I already know that I've worked through it in therapy. I have issues with intimacy. Like, I just, it's a thing for me. I think when guys pace it, when they pace kind of the whole, like, I'm super into you thing, yes. then I feel comfortable.
Right.
If they're, like, really, really strong and heavy right at once, yes, mm-hmm. like, that kind of freaks me out. I had a situation this summer where I kind of had to, like, vocalize that.
I did, too.
Yeah. I finally just came to a point where I was like, you know, if I want things to change, I kind of have to, like, tell them. You know what I mean? I can't just, like, flip out and then
until you start dating a psychic you're not gonna
right so I literally just kind of had to be like, I would really like it if you would just I don't remember what this is. I think it was this guy who wanted to go on a date on Monday and then he wanted to go on a date on Wednesday too, and I was just kind of like, you know, it was Tinder. It was this guy on Tinder who wanted Tinder. To do like a dinner date, and I wasn't ready for that yet. Like, we had met for coffee. I wasn't initially super attracted to him. I thought he had a good character, so I was like, you know what, I'll go on a second date with you. And he wanted to do, like, the dinner date. And I was like, nope, like, this is my learning moment of just being like, you know what, I'd really like it if we could just, you know, keep it a little bit casual at this point and just do lunch.
Right.
Which was good, because we had a lunch date, and I was like, no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. But it was that thing where inside, like, I'm hyperventilating. I'm like, oh my god, like, there's all these expectations of, like, dinner, and I don't even know if I really like them. And, like, yeah, so... Anyways,
I'm notorious for getting myself into like dumb situations where they're like, oh, just come over, we'll just hang out, you know, no big deal. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to have sex with you. Like, I'll just tell them flat out. And it'll be like, oh, no, that's not what I'm aiming for. Just come over. This is this past weekend, actually. Right. Just,
oh, that's hilarious.
So I went over. And it was like, I had that first moment where I'm like, oh, my God, I am now actually officially mature. Because, you know, the guy is starting to kiss me. And I actually pushed him back. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm leaving. I was like, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to have a physical relationship with you. Because, you know, he was very attractive. But there was, like, no emotional connection. And there's okay. that point where you're like, wow, I actually am mature enough to walk away.
Yes.
And like be okay with it and be like, yeah, sure, you're hot and whatever. And, you know, I could sit here and like enjoy this for whatever moment. But I was like, no, I'm leaving. Yeah. And
it's so empowering when you do that too.
It is.
Isn't
it is. Like, but yes. Anytime that you can make your decision fast, like, because I tend to let things go too long and be in that situation, I'm like, oh, well, he was nice. He's such a nice guy.
I try to talk myself into it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, this is the person on paper that I should be dating. On paper is my big phrase too, because you know, dating online, everything is like digitally on paper.
Ruined our generation.
Oh my God, it totally did. But it's like the things that I will let someone get away with when I meet them in person, I would never ever choose from like Tinder or OkCupid or whatever dating site. Like, I would never be okay with a guy that's shorter than me and, you know, is uneducated and all this stuff on, you know, online. But in real life, I don't care. You have a great personality.
We have chemistry.
Right.
Great. Right. Yes. Yeah.
So it is. It has ruined our generation. And I think in a state, especially where people already are passive and don't come to talk to you in person,
gosh.
It just makes it so much worse.
It's so hard. Like, I just want that peace. And I know that some of the greatest relationships of my life have come through online dating.
It's true. Me too.
So I don't want to throw that completely out the window, but it is different. But there's also definitely guys in my life that if I would have seen them online, I wouldn't have given them a second chance.
Right.
And I don't say that as like sounding shallow, or I don't mean to sound shallow. It was more of, you know, when you see them write a status update on Facebook and you're just like, guys, like, he's actually really cool in person. You know what I mean? It's kind of that thing.
You need to know the inside joke. You don't get their personality.
Yeah,
there's
you need
no
to get
way.
The vernacular.
Yeah.
But I crave kind of that in-person connection. Mm-hmm. That has been one of the big things about moving back to Minneapolis is that I want to be social. Right now, I'm not. Right now, I'm totally hibernating and, like, working on my book. And, like, mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. But when I think about going out, I crave kind of that interaction where it's mm-hmm. like, I just want to meet somebody face-to-face and have that conversation. The last kind of relationship that I was in was built on that. And I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed just having this person come up to me and strike up a conversation and then we're literally talking for the next 2 hours, you know? And that was kind of what the soul burn was built on.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily trying to recreate that with somebody else. I'm just kind of, I just really enjoyed that.
It's a nice pace. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this before, but I feel like Minnesota does not have the serendipitous aspect of anything, not even just dating.
Unless it's misconnections on Craigslist.
Right.
It does not.
Yes, that is our version. You're right.
Yeah.
It's just like you don't just go out and end up with this awesome night where you end up at three different parties and you meet all these people. It just, I don't know what it is. Why? Trust me, and any opportunity that I get where the people will be like, oh, let's go to this other place, I will follow along because it seems like there should be that opportunity, but it goes nowhere. It's really weird.
I had that moment of epiphany probably the weekend after I moved back here. Because, again, I had this thing where Northwoods is a little bit different. It shouldn't be. It's only two hours north. But I feel
it's
like
– Wisconsin, though.
It is Wisconsin.
There's a very big difference.
I feel like men are a lot more assertive up there.
I agree.
Both good and bad. Agreed. But I've always felt that when I started going up there for weekends with my best friend for like Berkey and Muskie Fest.
Right.
For listeners who are listening. I love saying that.
Awesome events.
Yes. Danielle has come up for those and we have hung out for those events. And I feel like too that men who might live in Minneapolis, St. Paul and wouldn't come and talk to you at the bars here, once they get up north, game on. Like, they will come up and talk to you and approach you and your
inhibition's
friends.
Gone for some reason.
Totally. You go to the river, and it's, like, game over. Like, all these guys are talking to you and asking you to dance and like buying you drinks, if you put that same group of guys in the local downtown, they wouldn't even say hello to you as it's you walk
probably
by.
Probably because they just got out of work.
Maybe.
Probably with their coworkers. No.
Or they're too drunk to say anything.
Or that.
But, and I know that I'm probably going to get some pushback from guys who are listening.
I hope you do.
I hope I do too, because I want them to be
Let's start a change.
The difference.
can we start a revolution
be
here?
Be the change that ladies want to see, gentlemen.
Can we have a night where it's the no real plans night where everyone goes out and like the goal is just to meet someone you don't know and see where you end up by the end of the night?
Absolutely.
It's like a choose your own adventure bar crawl.
I love that. We're doing it.
How do we do this? How do we get
started? We're going to do it. We'll put it in motion. It's going to happen.
Okay. Because I think you can do it. See, I don't have the following, but I think you can put it in
motion.
Well,
you're going to help me with logistics for sure.
I like to plan a party.
Yes. And like, because there's been a couple of different things that have happened that if we can conjoin them, it would be amazing. So my friend Kate O'Reilly had the Break the Ice meetup a couple of years ago where you went, and I think it was more of a Twitter thing, but you went and the goal was you had to talk to somebody that you didn't know. Okay. And it's amazing to
be in
a
same concept. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's amazing to be in a room of adults and be like, we're adults. Like, we're successful. We're interesting people. And still, like, we are crippled with fear of having a conversation with somebody that we don't know. Right?
It's so weird.
It's crazy.
And the eye contact thing. You would think it was a bunch of homeless people in a bar together because nobody wants to make eye contact.
Nobody
with
wants
each other.
To make eye contact.
Like, when I lived in New York, that was the whole thing. You don't make eye contact with homeless people.
Right.
That sounds horrible, but whatever.
Yeah. But when you're in the park, guys are running by and they're all making eye contact with you. And you're like, what is this magical city? Where am I?
Right. And then here, it's like a rule altogether. You just don't make eye contact if you don't know the person.
Yeah. Otherwise, like, you're afraid of being seen as creepy or whatever.
I don't know what it is. I must be so creepy.
I'm a creepster. I gave myself a goal probably a month and a half ago. My friend Lacey and I were out one night, and there was a really cute guy where we were, and I was like, that guy's really cute. And she's like, well, then smile at him. I was like, oh, I could probably do that. So then we kind of talked about the fact that when I see somebody that I like, I need to look at him and smile instead of do the thing. It sounds so ridiculous when I say it out loud, but it makes so much sense inside my head of like, do the thing of like, I'm going to pretend that I'm not seeing you and that I'm just wandering around in my own world. And then you're going to approach me. I'll be like, oh, hello. I didn't see you. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, I'm the elusive butterfly. Because I always just had this thing inside my head that it's the like most popular guy in high school. That of course he knows that he's hot. Of course he knows he's awesome. Right. So like you don't want to look at him because you don't want to be like, that girl totally likes me.
But you know the guys that do think that, you don't want them to talk to you, to be honest.
Right. But it's just crystallizing for me now that like that's like an origin story for me of like being in school and like having a crush on the most popular guy ever and looking at him or like smiling at him and like them being made fun of for him being like, she thinks I'm cute. You know what I mean? So now I carry that over to guys that I see. But now my challenge is to bring it back around. My challenge is that if I see a cute guy where I'm at, I look at him and I smile and then I hurry up and run away.
Right. Well, I like to do the smile and then you walk two steps and then you kind of look over your shoulder, make sure they're checking you out.
See, I can't do that because I've read a billion Cosmo articles that are like, yeah, you got to do the look and then the look down and then the look again.
And the look down? That was a Cosmo?
Well,
the look behind you. Not necessarily looking down. They're going to think you're looking at their junk.
Either way, like you can look behind you, you can look somewhere else, you can look at your friend and then look at them again. But it's always the like look, look away, look again, which seems, yes, you see it in every movie and you're like, yes. I got this. And then you're faced with like this incredibly beautiful person and you're like, I don't know, like too much attention. I don't want to look at you. And then, of course, you always have the guy that you're like, goo, that you're constantly making eye contact with throughout the rest of the night. You're like, I don't like you. Stop looking at me.
Right.
I'm sorry I keep catching your eyes. It doesn't mean anything.
Stop staring at me. Yeah. So I don't accidentally.
Stop staring and swan. Yeah. So
I think the other trick, too, is like, where are you doing this? Like, I would say the only place that I have successfully done the gaze and had someone come talk to me has always been, like, bar/dance places, which I don't go to too many times. It's kind of like going out dancing. I kind of feel old, you know. It doesn't really work as well.
Yeah.
But I've never had it really work at like a sit-down Irish bar, which is where I feel like we always sort of end up, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think or that's part of it.
Where you want to end up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like at a nice wine bar.
It's kind of like because there's also like how the seating is. Like if you're at a bar, there's a better chance if you're actually sitting at the bar. But if you're with your friend, there's no way. Because if you're in a booth, it's like this invisible wall is just there. And, you know.
I used to lose my shit with a group of friends that I would go out with who always wanted to sit together in a booth. And one night I had to explain it to them that you guys are all married. And I am not.
Right.
And so if we're going to go out somewhere, I would like to at least be in a place where somebody can approach me.
Right.
But it was that thing of like, or we would go out to places where it would be like drinking and dancing. Like we'd go to like ice fishing opener or whatever. And they'd always want to sit with a group of old guys because those old guys were always entertained by them. And then they'd buy us a bunch of beer. And I'm like, there are no guys who are going to come up and talk to me if we're sitting with all these old guys. Oh, used to drive me insane. So finally, like, I would pick a buddy and be like, we're going to go mingle. Like, we're going to go to the bar. We're going to stand there. We're just going to, like, mingle. I just don't want to be attached to this group of, like, married friends with middle-aged married guys. It's like, it's not going to work for me. It's not going to work out in my favor.
I hear you.
Yeah, the booth drives me crazy. We're not sitting in a booth.
When I first came to Minneapolis, I made a lot of friends with the other transplants at work because they were hiring a lot of people at the same time. And I was the youngest in their group. And the other ladies, their style was much more like drinking beer and sitting at these Irish bars in their booths and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was hard for me because I was still in the like, I want to go out and party and dance and be crazy and stuff. And then like I started hanging out with younger people and now I'm the oldest in my group.
Yeah.
And I'm being lapped because people are having babies. And like, it's so sad because I'm like, you guys don't even go out and do anything fun anymore. I'm like 5 to 9 years older than you guys. And for some reason, I have the most energy out of all of us. And that's just pathetic.
Oh, you know? My gosh. Yep. Like, I totally know the feeling. Like being 35 and being in Hayward, going out to the bars every weekend, like you get in this bubble where it's like, this is totally fine. And then you take a step back at one point and you're like, I'm the 35-year-old woman in the bar. Like, I'm the person that I told myself I wasn't going to
be. Oh, my God.
But there's no other outlet.
There's so many things where I think that's the disappointing truth is, like, there's so many things about my life right now that I like, shake my head at myself. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're the person I hated when I was 20 in my 20s.
Oh, that's the worst. It's the worst feeling. It's it that is. Thing of, like,
I don't know how it got
like,
there.
Yeah. Like, the only thing that I can use to pull myself out of it is being like, well, and also when I was 20, I was an idiot and I didn't know anything about life. But it is that thing when you're 35 and you're like, yeah, I'm exactly in the place that when I was 20 years old, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be 35 and be in that position,
right?
You know? And then you're like, this maybe is fine. Yeah, I remember this is going to embarrass me and I'm sorry to
I'll tell an embarrassing story
upset.
Afterward.
Okay, good. But like, I remember being 25 and dating a 35-year-old who had gotten divorced. Not recently, but like had 4 kids on great jobs, but and like part-time custody or whatever, but like lived in an apartment. And I remember like complaining about it. This is so embarrassing. I'm like, what a jerk I was. But complaining about it to Katie and being like, he's 35. He should have his shit together by now. And then being 35 and being like, fuck that. Why would I want to buy a house?
Right.
I want to move other places and like my overhead
exactly,
is super low.
Exactly.
I'll live with roommates. Like
I'm
I don't
jealous
give a
of
shit.
You.
You know, it's just that thing of like, it's that perspective taking
it
of
is.
Like when I was 25, I literally negated a guy because he lived in a fucking apartment. Like who was I? What was my life? Like, why was I like that?
I have no idea. I don't know what I was thinking. Even like, you know, when I bought my house, like my reason for buying a house was so I could throw parties and have a dog. Good logic, right? And now I'm like, oh my God, I wish I didn't have this house because it's the only thing that like really grounds me here. I'm like, I could get up and leave and go somewhere else any day. I don't have family here. I don't have a boyfriend here. I'm like, you know, I could just get in the car and go, but I can't because I have a house.
Because you have a house. And that's the one thing that I'm like, it puts me in a spot being 35 of finally realizing that may be something that I really just don't want in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been times in my earlier 30s when it made me feel behind my peers.
Right.
Watching my best friend buy a house, watching, being envious of my other two friends who lived a block away from each other and had their own houses and like were doing really cool things with it.
It's a farce.
It was just one of those things where it was like, am I, again, it's that that midlife crisis of like, I'm not where I thought I would be.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
It is.
That was Eleanor Roosevelt, right?
No, it's so true because it is that thing where finally coming to the realization of seeing other friends, like kind of what you said, like I have another friend up in Hayward that like she bought a house because that's where she thought she was going to be in her life. And then everything changed. And she's like, and now I have this house. And she's like, I really wish I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And we had a younger friend.
It's a lot
friend.
Of overhead.
Yes. And we had another friend who was thinking about buying a house. And I've always been supportive of whatever decision she makes.
We are now going to self-sabotage the Minneapolis buying market. And I'm never going to sell my house. This stinks.
But I just kind of told her, I'm like, you know, you gotta be happy with where you buy your house. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, there's people who flip real estate and that's fine. But I'm like, I have a brother who has 3 houses. And not because he's a mega millionaire, but because he would buy a house in the different towns that he was in for work. Mm-hmm. And then he would move. And then the market would suck and he wouldn't be able to sell his house. Right. And these are great houses.
And
you
perpetually looking for someone to rent your place so you don't lose money every month.
It is such a hassle. I've never, like, he has so many headaches from it. And I just, it was a huge relief to kind of come to that realization of like, you know, maybe I don't ever really want to buy a house. Or maybe it's okay if I don't buy a house until I'm like 55 and I'm like, this is it. Like, this is the place that I want to be. I've done my traveling. I've done my living in other, and not saying that 55 is the end of the road. Not anything like
that's usually when you're supposed to start traveling.
Right. And I, like, my biggest... Right now, like, my biggest, like, thing of settling down is, like, I really kind of want to get, like, an RV and just, like, travel all around the country. And,
it
like,
is just, a house. It's just a movable.
Yeah.
One. Totally.
And, like, that would be perfect for me. Like, my friend Sarah renovates RVs, and they are amazing.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. She does oils. She's my, like, oil mentor.
Mm-hmm.
But she, her family's been doing this for, like, 5 years, and they just bought a beautiful house in Boulder. Renovated it. It's gorgeous. And then they're like, let's hop back on the RV and like do another country tour of
awesome.
All these different places. And I'm like, that is the life that I want. Like, I want to have a place that I can come home to, but I can also leave it at any time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Leave with it. Yeah.
I think there's also something a little romantic now because it's so old fashioned mm-hmm. about not having a house until you're married.
Yeah.
Because there's days where I come home and I'm like, I have this 4-bedroom house and it's just me and my tiny dog and we only live on the first floor, you know, and it's like, it was a great independent move and made me feel really proud when I first did it. But now it has weird connotations for me where I'm like, I have this empty house.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not empty. I have a lot of shit. It is very full of stuff it should not be full of.
Right. It just doesn't, our mind is a, what's it called? Oh, it's my favorite saying ever. Again, I just have brain freezes when I'm on here. The mind is like a disqualifying mechanism. Oh. I learned that. You saw my apartment in Hayward, the big, huge
Amazing.
Loft. Yeah, yeah, it was beautiful. It was gorgeous.
Yeah,
I went
home a little jealous after that.
It was a dream space, but it was that thing of like, the mind is a disqualifying mechanism. The longer I lived there, the more I was like, you know, I really don't need this much space. And like, it'd be really nice to like, blah, 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 be somewhere else. It's that thing of like, when you, and I wanted and lusted and like dreamed about living there for probably 20 years since I had first been in Hayward. I was like, if I'm ever going to live in a place in Hayward, I want to live in that place. But it seemed like the impossible dream.
Right.
And then I got it. And it was this thing of like,
how did I get so lucky?
And then 3 months later, I'm like, you know, it's not so great. Like, your mind just kind of, like, starts...
Looks for the bad things?
It just starts to disqualify it. You just get used to those things. Mm. And I think it's a natural... It's not a personality thing. It's not being ungrateful. It's a natural process of, like, just being a human. Like, we're always looking for the next better. And I think buying a house and jobs and things in relationships, like, it's kind of that thing of, like, you get used to this great thing. And every once in a while, something will trigger it, and you'll be like, oh, that's right. Like, this is really great. Like, this morning, I was thinking about that place, and I'm like, God, it was so fun to decorate it for Christmas and, like, just to have all that space. But then I had to remind myself that, and I had a 3-year lease, and, like, it was a huge overhead, and I wasn't happy there.
Right.
So now I have this, like, place here that where I'm much more mobile. I can go see all my friends anytime I want. It's that thing where, like, you constantly have to remind yourself that these are the things that you want. Because otherwise, I think that we get used to kind of being like, what's better than this? Well, now I want that. Well, now this isn't so great.
I mean, is it a curse of just being ambitious? I mean, you were talking about earlier, you know, always having been ambitious and what your goal setting is based on that. But I don't know. I mean, your premise is kind of frightening, actually, because to me, you know, I think there are people that seem perpetually happy no matter what.
Yeah.
And how do they get over that? How do you get there?
I think you have to not give in to that thought process.
So you think every day they're actually working to, I mean, this is the theory that people convince themselves to be happy every day.
I think so. I think, like, when you put it in that context of...
How do you turn off the negative that if you really see the flaw?
I don't know if it's a negative, though. I think it's more of that thing of, like... I think it's a natural response for us as humans, whether it's an evolutionary response or... You know what I mean? Because it's like if we had been totally happy with our huts, like, we wouldn't have learned to make
something better. Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that, like... Everything you get, you're going to eventually be unhappy with. That's not what I mean at all.
I was going to say, otherwise, neither of us should ever date anyone again, because it would be...
No, but I just think it's one of those fruitless things where, like, after a while, your mind kind of just, like, throws it into perspective of, like, when you have that goal of, like, I want to make $1 million, and then you reach that goal, inevitably, at some point, you're going to become used to that.
Right.
You're going to become used to having $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes this thing of, like, well, now I'm used to this. So now what's next? Not necessarily like, oh my God, like, having $1 billion totally sucks. Like, my life sucks right now. It's more of just this thing of, like, your mind continues to kind of just.
The next best thing.
Yeah. It just becomes this thing of, like, okay, well, now we're here. And, like, now we're used to this. So, like, now what else?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else do we do? Whether it's. Well, now we make this place even awesomer with a new couch or, like, things like that. It's just more of that thing of, like, it to me, it's rather stunning how easily we become used to the new thing that we have.
Right.
Yeah. Not a bad thing, but sometimes a bad thing. But yeah, maybe it's that thing of, like, you have to remind yourself to continue to be grateful for that thing, which is a challenge. All the time for everything. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, this is a cool space, so you should be good for a while.
I am not disqualifying the space.
You should be good for a while.
Yeah.
I like the window because it's so close to the floor, so you kind of have a good view.
Yes, it's nice.
I keep seeing cars pass and I keep looking over like, squirrel, squirrel.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, we are at about time.
Wow.
Thanks for joining me, Danielle.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Amber. It's good to see you in your new space.
Yeah, it's good to see your face in my new space. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and make good choices. Thanks, everyone, for listening to episode 6 of Making Good Choices. For this and other great podcasts, you can head on over to mathishard.net. You can also find Making Good Choices over on iTunes, where you can subscribe to it. You can also rate and review it to add a couple more karma points to your grand total. For more amazing insights, aka some ridiculous claptrap about how much I love The Bachelor, you can follow me on Twitter at Amber_L Carter. You can also head on over to my website, amberlcarter.com, where you can find out some other stuff that I'm kind of into. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and get out there and make some good choices.